Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic lever it's supposed to be.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for reaching out. Thank you for giving me the opportunity just to share a dialogue with your audience. I'm looking forward to jumping into it, man.
So why don't we start by, why don't you tell us about your story, who you are, how you got into the game that you're in right now?
How much time do we have?
We can have, this awesome, can be a four-day podcast if you want.
Awesome, right? So, you know, the story is a little eight-year-old boy sitting on an airplane, 1981, heading over to the U.S. from Trinidad. And there's a gentleman sitting next to me who's in a business suit and, you know, from what I remember, sandy brown hair, mustache, very business looking, right? And as the airline stewardess is coming and giving us snacks and drinks and whatever, he orders a drink and I don't remember what it is, but he says, "And get my buddy over here, whatever it is he wants." Man, and in that moment, I was like, I don't know who this guy is, I don't know what he does, but I want to be that because he's cool as shit and he just made me feel like $1 million, right? So fast forward, we land in the Bronx, New York, 1981. And it's the Bronx, New York, 1981. I'm from Trinidad. I think my block had more people than the entire island, right? And so fast forward to my first class trip was to the Bronx Zoo. So I'm in second grade at PS 119. And we get to lunch and all of the other kids, they're opening up their peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or their bologna sandwiches. And my mom packs me a traditional back home Trinidad food lunch, and it's curry roti, curry chicken, potato and roti. And it is not the prettiest sight. And of course, you know, all the little kids start making fun of me. I dump my food. Fast forward into my adult life, that avatar of Mr. Success later evolved into the Michael Douglas character in Wall Street, power suit, power tie. And I gave my, you know, gave my fair shot at two semesters of college and figured out college was not for me. So I jumped into the world of sales. At 21, after spending 2 years as a prison guard, and that's another story for another podcast, I ended up in the world of sales. And rough start, because I remember the director, I believe he was, a district manager maybe, that interviewed me, told me that he didn't think that I had what it took for sales, but he was willing to offer me a job in the warehouse as a porter. Long story short, the manager of the store talked me into it. He was a friend of mine. And he said, "Man, 6 months, just give me 6 months, I'll get you there." And sure enough, he was right. He was a phenomenal mentor because he said, "Spend the 6 months in the warehouse, get to know product, get to know SKUs, you'll be ahead of everyone else." And sure enough, when I hit the floor, for every two customers someone else was waiting on, I had four because I knew inventory. I knew where to find everything. I knew where the, you know, damaged items were if a customer couldn't afford something off the sales floor. So had a great run there. And then as the story would have it, I chased a girl, ended up in Austin, Texas, but not too long before leaving Southeast Texas to head up to Austin, a buddy of mine, Mike Malba, says to me, "Hey, when you go up there, you should just go to work for Dell. Everyone at Dell is a millionaire, even the janitors." I go, "Okay, cool." I go to Austin. And so I took a job as a recruiter for 6 months. And I told myself, if I didn't have a sales position in 6 months, because they said it was 1 year is what it would typically take, then I was out. And so in 6 months, I was actually at a job fair scouting for managers that I could potentially get them to give me their recs, right? Long story short, I got sold. 2 weeks later, I was getting a job offer. And 2 weeks later, May 10th, 1999, I was walking in the doors of corporate America. Long story short, no college degree. I didn't really look like everyone else. So I had a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, but I had that avatar. And so fast forward to February 6th was my first day as full-time entrepreneurs, coach and speaker. And I literally just walked out of the door of $250K and a corporate IT sales job. And so for me, it was really cool because I got to the pinnacle of that, you know, career that I kind of envisioned as a little boy. I still had a lot of upward momentum, so I left at what I feel like the top of the game to go pursue the thing that I really love and I'm passionate about. So that little boy that threw away the curry roti because he was ashamed of it and he felt not worthy and not enough and didn't have a voice. Well, he developed a voice over the years, and those stories and those traumas got healed along the way. And so every time I had something that externally affected me and fed those fears and validated those insecurities throughout corporate America, I just worked even fucking harder just to prove them wrong. And the more money I made and the bigger my title got and the more money I made and the bigger my title got and the more people loved me and the more recognition I got, the more I fed those insecurities, right? So it was, pardon my phrase here, but it was what I call living with the bitch on the beach. Some people say life is a beach and everything is sunshine. Some people say life's a bitch and everything they touch is, you know what, right? And I literally was in a position where I had everything material-wise that I wanted, down to having the, you know, the trophy wife, right? Or the eye candy on my arm. And I literally created this avatar to protect myself from my own insecurities. And so now I'm in a place where I simply just want to share those stories. And by sharing those stories and by sharing what I took out of those experiences with the framework of how I got out of those and heal those traumas, my hope is simply to inspire, motivate, and help people create their own light.
What a great story. I mean, it's kind of an interesting kind of full circle thing where you had this picture of this guy, man, I want to be this guy. You figured out a way to get to that guy. You kind of put that cloak of that avatar on, and there's always a gap between, you know, your cloak's not your skin, right? So that gap between your body and that, you know, that avatar you were wearing, that's just full of insecurities at that point. And at some point you seem to have sort of dropped that and become who you actually are and stepped out of that and shed that avatar. And it's probably multiplied your impact a lot.
Absolutely. You know, if you kind of look at what the ROI is on being truly me, probably the last 3 years of my career that I've really gone on a deep, deep soul searching journey, right? So literally I was a guy in 1991 with the hatchback Mustang 5.0, 212s in the back. And when I wasn't bumping Milli Vanilli or Vanilla Ice, that's how old I am, right? It was Tony Robbins' Personal Powers, not CDs, but cassettes.
Right.
So I've always had this game. I made a decision a long time ago that it was either going to be 4 years in college or kind of the school of hard knocks. And I was able to find some really good mentors that turned me on to virtual mentors like Tony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, Les Brown, and those type of folks. And it wasn't until the last 3 years or so that I really got more in touch with who I am beyond the body, beyond the mind, the true essence of myself. And oddly enough, the last 3 years have been my biggest W-2 years. And I haven't done anything to advance my sales game. I simply just got under the covers, shed the mask, and got rid of the personas, if you will, and just revealed the true me. And that just resonated with people. It connected with people on a deeper level. And I did less selling, more connecting, but my impact and my income went up.
Isn't that funny? It's so counterintuitive because you think you got to act this way and you got to get the suspenders and the haircut and you got to say things a certain way and look like these other people. And, you know, kind of what you end up doing is kind of putting yourself in a box in a way versus shedding those things and being your actual self. And that's really who anyone's ultimately going to connect with. Why do you think that's so hard for people?
You know, I have this crazy theory that there's only like 2,000, maybe 200, right? Just not very many avatars in the world. And we're all simply mirrors of each other because if you think about it, from the moment we're born, we're influenced, right? We're born into this world knowing the emotion of love. Everything else is learned. The first fear that we have is a fear of falling. And then we learn our insecurities. We adopt insecurities from our parents, right?
Right.
Then we go to school and we learn those from our peers and throughout all the way, even into work, the 8 to 5, now we're shifting our personalities to get the acceptance of our peers and our boss. Right. So we literally just continue to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, I'll fast forward to kind of where I am, you know, guys, my age, you hit the old midlife crisis, right. And you go, man, this job isn't me. I have a family. Yeah. God, I hate these people. Right? I don't even like my wife. I don't even like my kids. What am I doing here?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Listen, if you're just not that person, because we've all been sold that this is what it's supposed to look like. And if you look at it, you know, society just creates these cookie cutters, right? Cookie cutter neighborhoods, cookie cutter cars. Go to the grocery store and just look at how many thousands of items that we're all buying the same thing. So we all literally become walking clones of each other. And unfortunately, that shines brighter than our insecurities. So what happens is that darkness never gets dissolved, right? It simply just gets masked because I want to be like Nick. I want to be like Dylan. I want to be like so-and-so. And so we just add a little. And if you look at it, I mean, think about 20 people that you know. You could probably take them all and put them into little pockets, right? Mm-hmm. And the reality is we don't vary that much. And even when you pull those labels back, we don't vary that much even more because we're simply down to one universal being of love and light. There's no color, there's no he, there's no she, there's none of that. We're simply beings of love and light. And that's where I choose to live from.
And again, it's kind of that full circle, because if you have kids or you have a baby who's a two-year-old who's walking around, they're just in it. They're in the moment. They're themselves. They have none of those insecurities. They don't even know what to be insecure about. They're just sort of there. And if we can get sort of closer to that, obviously we have language and obviously we're sort of, you know, we grow and we have skills and things like that. But as we can get closer to that authentic person that's inside of us, that all the people around us actually know, that all the authentic relationships that we have are sort of rooted in, then I think it makes it easier to have those kind of authentic connections with people in your workplace, or, you know, the checkout person at the grocery store, or somebody on the bus, or whatever.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of taking the direction or tying it into D&I, I think so many times companies want to add programs, teach you how to do this, right? Because maybe you came from a community that didn't have certain resources. Great. But if we go back and talk about what we've just been chatting about for the last 10 minutes or so, getting back to the core of who you are, what if instead of giving those resources, we lent resources to allow you to shed those emotional traumas and emotional ties?
Right.
So now when you walk in, you're not fitting a mold, because the reality is stereotype thinking is out there 100%. And so if I already have a preconceived notion of what you are, who you should, what you should act like, you know, how you should speak and this and that and the other, and you come in and fit that, well, that's not really doing anything. But now, if I can give you enough tools and resources to shed that and you come in, I love even the shock factor, because there was one point people would look at me in the middle of a conversation and go, hang on a second. I'm sorry, but man, I really didn't expect this type of dialogue from you.
Interesting.
And there was a point where I really just wanted to punch people in the face, right? And go, really?
Right.
I'm standing right here. I can hear you calling me stupid, right?
Right.
But then later on that evolved, and it evolved into, you know, if that's a thing that I can tap into someone else's energy field and throw them off, and now they have the ability to look at someone that looks like me and not expect me to be like, you know, maybe I look like a tough guy, or maybe I look, you know, whatever, right? But if they can have a true, genuine, authentic, real dialogue, it'll shift their perspective of maybe how they treat someone else in the future. And that's how we connect. That's how we grow. That's how organizations continue to impact their entire network and their entire customer field by including everyone, right? And having this diversity and this diverse way of thinking and diverse way of being.
That's the point. So that's a great point. I mean, you've kind of come past the initial offense of that comment and sort of move past that to a point of compassion and seeing the sort of opportunity in that to sort of shatter those preconceptions, shatter those frameworks, and help that person move past whatever that old state that they were in, which is phenomenal. I think there's a huge opportunity for organizations to do that, leaders, even if they're in a large McDonald's type of an organization, to do that on their teams. Like, it's easier to make those connections on a small level with the few people that you have an intimate relationship with. But there's a certain sort of single dimensionality to a lot of these D&I programs I see, which I think are rooted in a good place, right? It's a team of HR professionals in a 50,000 person organization or something. And they're like, man, there's injustices in the world. What can we do? How can we use our platform to work this stuff out in our little pocket of the world. But there's some kind of a breakdown as that stuff gets pushed out to people where it loses some authenticity. And what do you think that is rooted in?
I think it is a system of the old, right? I'll give you an example. The first conversation I ever had in corporate America around D&I was about 15 years ago. And at the time I was a sales coach, and we brought everyone in from Oklahoma City, Nashville, down to Austin, Texas. And we sat in a room for 2 days and we talked about diversity and inclusion. And back then, shortly thereafter, I joined the outside sales team, and there was about 2,500 people on the outside sales team. And I'm going to include every subject that falls under the subtitle of minority. There were literally like five of us, right? Mm-hmm. And literally everyone else was, remember those avatars that we talked about? Well, 15 years ago, outside sales teams for IT companies had an avatar, and I did not fit it, right? And so when you look at that, give me the question again. I lost my train of thought.
My question is, how does something that I think a lot of times is rooted in an authentic desire from someone who's spearheading it in the HR department or the ethics and compliance department to try to drive these programs forward, it breaks down and feels inauthentic on the back end, and it turns into one dimensional or something.
Yeah. Apologize. So back to my story. So back to the story of, you know, we talked about D&I, and D&I really was a conversation of black and white and maybe man, woman. I mean, it was really surface level, right? But I think what's happening today is we're still having that backbone, right, to lead those conversations. And diversity today and inclusion is way different, right? Fast forward about 5 years ago in my career, anyone that knows me knows I have a flair for fashion. I love clothes. I love playing dress up, right? And so I was at a sales conference, and there was a tall blonde person with a very slim cut suit back facing to me. And I immediately was like, that's a dope fucking suit, man. I need to go tell that dude, good job. And I literally walked up and tapped the person on the shoulder, and she turned around, and I was like, yo, that is a sick suit. Like, man, where'd you get that? And we just started talking. And the reality is I was a little bit taken aback. Like, I was expecting a guy. And my point is that diversity and inclusion looks very, very different today. So yesterday when we were talking about diversity and inclusion, it was male, female, or black, white, right? Now we're talking about social economic classes. Now we're talking about gender. Now we're talking about so many different things that fall under that umbrella. It opens up the field to so much different trauma. And the trauma is the root, right? That drives the action, that drives the reality. So if we're still talking about trauma even, which most organizations are not even talking that deep, but if we're talking about trauma of just man, woman, black, or white, we're missing the boat, because today it's a much different conversation.
And is it too
big of a thing? That's a misstep.
Yeah, and is it just too big of a thing for it to be sort of rolled out from a top-down perspective? Is it too nuanced and too sort of deep, do you think? Or is there hope for, hey, you know, and I guess I'm not asking for like a silver bullet. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to pick this thing apart, because I find that there's a ton of value in the D&I area. I find that there's a ton of opportunity in it, not just from the black, white thing, man, woman thing, gender thing, whatever. I think there's another dimensionality to it, and we talk about it a lot, but you know, if you're really going to meet people where they're at, and you're going to create a space in an organization that people can bring their authentic selves to work, that's not just them feeling comfortable there. It's also about them feeling like it's a place that they can be successful, and not just a type way, you know, type A's are always going to be successful. They're always going to elevate to the top of the organization, but there's some, I don't know if they're called type B's or whatever. We kind of draw this distinction between superstars and rock stars. A rock star is just someone who's steady Eddie, and they don't want the advancement, or they like a certain aspect of their job. They should be able to be successful, whatever that means, in the organization as well, without having to feel like, okay, well, you know, for me to be a quote unquote success, I have to move up and be a manager and manage people and do these other things. So I think that's a dimensionality of diversity and inclusion that a lot of organizations miss. And I'm just trying to understand, or trying to kind of unpack it a little bit, because I've just found a ton of value in the way my brother and I and the people that we all serve here have been able to coexist by truly meeting people where they're at, by truly letting them be their authentic selves, without them having to put that facade on. And I think part of it is we're able to do that because we have a smaller organization and it's easier for us to build trust, and we're kind of growing, and that sort of, you know what I'm saying? Like the boundaries of our organization are being, you know, established as we grow versus stepping into a massive organization. Like, how do you affect change? How do you start to boil the ocean type of a thing? Is it possible? And are there inroads to actually attacking what you're talking about, that trauma piece, which is the root of the tree that drives the behaviors, that drives the feelings, that drives the outcomes that we're all trying to affect?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'll attack that conversation as funneled down, right? Yeah. So if you look at it from the big picture, change management happens at the IC level, right? So it's one thing to give those tools and resources to leadership, have leadership go through their 90-day transformation or whatever the case is, right? Start to get the ball rolling, because I believe that even leaders must walk through the hero's journey. And as they evolve, their people evolve. So that's one thought, but that's old and that's been played. So what if we just went straight to the core, right? And went to the ICs and just plug those resources in, really just give a lot of effort behind it. And instead of management leading, let the ICs lead. Now, when the IC leads, yeah, you may kind of get that click, that cult, whatever you have, but that's what you want, because now that gets infectious. And now, because people are leading from within in a true authentic way, now you have positive infection, right? And Jack Welch, one of my favorite CEOs, talks about leadership unlike anyone else. And he says simply, a leader would say, look what we've done, right? A manager says, look what I've done. And so when you talk about successful managers or successful ICs getting, you know, they hit a point where they're making all the money, you know, they're at the top of their pay scale, and the only other logical thing to do is go to that manager job. So now they can get into that next pay bracket. And that's why we have a corporate America that's filled with managers, not leaders. Right. So now if we empower those high performance and say, listen, I can bring you into the bandwidth of manager pay. You don't have manager responsibility from an HR perspective, but you do dot line to leadership. You are engaged at a higher level. You do have some responsibilities, and maybe we build a bonus structure in around your coaching. So now you have the propensity to not only kill your number and be a very strong, disciplined IC, but now you can influence the organization. You can lend that energy. And now you feel more valued because you're playing with the big boys, but you don't have to answer to the same task that they do. Right. So everyone wins, right? And now it's kind of that top-down and bottom-up selling.
Yeah, and it's recognizing that IC, that individual contributor, it's recognizing that aspect of what they're good at, which is maybe bringing energy or building culture or coaching or whatever, without shackling them with a bunch of responsibilities that might not be in their wheelhouse. I mean, you've seen it in sales when a guy goes from they're killing it, they're a top salesperson, the only next thing to do, there's no more sort of sales brackets, there's no more sort of earning brackets, you got to get into management. Well, that's just a totally different game. That's a lot of routine, and there's nothing against that. It's just like a different skill set. And I think what you're saying is understand that there's, you know, this is kind of a deep thing you're saying. Understand that there's this sort of other dimension to this thing. Understand that there are contributions that are harder to look at, or that are harder to see, that are harder to touch sort of on a material level, but have a multiplicative impact on the people around them from a cultural perspective, and figure out a way to endorse those corporately and, you know, unleash that tendency that person may have to be that glue in that culture, or kind of strengthen that tapestry.
Absolutely. So, you know, what we end up doing is those highly disciplined, strong ICs, we almost force them into management, right? But here's what we don't know about John. John's wife hates him. John's kids can't stand him. He can't stand them. So that's the reason he's willing to put in 16 hours a day. Uh-huh. Right. And now all the chicks at the office love him, and all the guys want to be him. So he gets more praise there. And now his insecurities based on his fears and anxiety and stress are just building. So this is where he's getting his praise. So he continues to do that. He gets promoted. Now he's got 10 people under them that are all trying to emulate John. Now what happens to those 10 families? Now what happens, because John has an expectation, here's how I did it. So I work 12 hours.
Everybody, Right.
Exactly. So now you've got to do it. And that's back to the point I made earlier. That's why we have, and especially in the corporate space, we have so many clones. We literally have a handful of avatars. Well, you've got the Gary V's of the world, right? But here's the thing. There's a reason there's one Gary V, because only Gary V can do what Gary V does, right? And you've seen it in this space where there's a lot of entrepreneurs that try to emulate that and they just get burned out. Well, he might have just that one little speck in him that's different genetically that gives him that go-go, and that balance works with just a perfect mate and the perfect kid that they all align energetically. Listen, we cannot base our reality off of someone else's, and that's where we get stuck.
Right.
And that's where we get caught in this downward spiral, and it seems like the rest of the world is just blasting forward. It's not that the rest of the world is blasting forward. We're just being sucked so far back into the story that right. we're missing the present moment.
That's right. And the more you take your eye off that present moment, the more you take your eye onto someone else, which you, again, you see a lot with, you see it everywhere. You see it in corporate, you see it with entrepreneurs, to the extent that you're trying to be something you're not, somebody you're not sort of resonating at your natural frequency. And that's right. what ends up compromising your effectiveness. Any way you want to define that effectiveness, whether that's in your family, whether that's on the team that you're trying to lead, whether that's on the dollars that you're chasing, whatever those things are. And I think the Gary V thing, which I get a lot of people want to emulate, it's really just he's authentically who he is. And that's Absolutely. Probably what it is. So if you're going to emulate anything, emulate that. And that's really a shedding of all these other, you know, frameworks or avatars or whatever you want to call them that we tend to sort of step into because we're just drowning in our own insecurities and, you know, fears.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't have summarized that better.
So if we kind of, let's kind of tie this into what we're going through right now, because there's this massive change. We don't know how long it's going to be, 2 weeks. I doubt it's going to be 2 weeks. This could be a new normal for an extended period as we, as a sort of global community, fight this thing. What can organizations do? What can leaders do to not leave some of these things like diversity and inclusion, like some of the things we've been talking about, on the table in these new sort of workspaces that we're in? How do we not revert back to some of those, you know, just sort of survival type of things? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, you know, I think the average person takes 12 to 25 breaths per minute. The average person, I would say right now, is probably 25 to 32, which means that, and I would dare say that the average is 12 to, like I said, 12 to 25. I'd say there's probably a whole heck of a lot of people that hang out in the 25 range. All that says that most of us are activating the sympathetic nervous system and we're walking around in fight or flight, right? So now you add COVID-19 on this. Now there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear. Our two biggest fears are the fear of poverty and the fear of death. Both of those are in our faces right now, right? So you hit the nail on the head, the new norm. Everyone is trying to figure out how they can emulate yesterday in today's environment. So I'm at home. I need to have a schedule. My kid needs to have a schedule, right? We need to do things as normal. Well, here's reality. This is a new norm. So if you're waiting for things to go back like it was yesterday, A, it's not going to. The world is absolutely different. This is a complete pivot like 9/11 was,
correct?
Right? So it may not be zombie apocalypse, and it may not be just hunky-dory peachy. It's going to be somewhere in between, but it will be different.
Yes.
So right now, as we kind of have this downtime, and, you know, like I think it was just yesterday, we went to only essential businesses being open here in our state.
Yep.
And I think that's going to happen pretty widespread, pretty quick. I know that the major hubs are already in that scenario, right? So what we're going to have is we're going to have a lot of leadership that's at home, right? We're going to have a lot of meetings that are canceled. We're going to do as much as we can virtually. But I think organizations are going to start to see that we can save on real estate. We can still be effective virtually. And we're going to have more of this happening,
yep.
right? Which means that people are going to start valuing the extra hour that they had in the morning instead of getting ready to go to work, and the extra hour in the afternoon, coming home, winding down. I think that if leaders use this time to invest in themselves and understand this is a really good time just to be really true and honest with yourself, right? Understand where your shadows are. Like, listen, text 10 people, 5 that you know don't like you and 5 that you know love you. Ask them what they think of you and sit down and start reflecting. That's a great place to start, right? And then if leaders can understand that about themselves, what's going to happen in turn is they're going to be more and more present, and they're going to recognize that this is the new normal. And so now the rules and beliefs that you can create in this time within this new normal, that's alignment. Right. So when we exit this, whatever that looks like, if we can only go out between the hours of 8 and 5, or if it's full-fledged like it was, we have a new reality. Because the key thing is, even if the world physically goes back to where it was, what are we? We're maybe in week 2 of this, right? Let's just say it goes another couple weeks. Listen, that's enough to cause emotional damage. And now what's going to happen is, yes, the world may look the same, but you've got a ton of people that are coming out with emotional trauma. Now the things that didn't trigger them before are going to trigger them. Right. So now you're going to have more conflict. And unless we have a little bit more dialogue around conflict resolution and understanding at the root, right, then we're not going to be able to get by that. So yeah, we may get out and get back to quote unquote normal, but then we're going to have that incubation period, right? So the way that leaders and corporations can bypass that and even get ahead of their competition by investing in their people is now to put tools and resources into place. When those leaders are at home and they have a couple of extra hours, give them those virtual products, give them those coaches, give them those guides to help them work through those things. So now when we emerge, that's the investment at the top. And then remember, we talked about D&I down at the IC level for change management. That's how we go top down.
Yeah. And I just think there's such an opportunity here. Listen, I'm kind of an optimistic person. I'm definitely not a head in the sand type of a person, but I just tend to acclimate toward the positive. And obviously this thing is tragic. Obviously there's people dying. People's businesses are, you know, these fears you're talking about of poverty and death, these are here, right? This is what people are living through. I have friends who are out of work and they don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, they're waiting on, you know, the Senate to pass this or that to get some clarity from a dollar perspective. But to your point, there's a lot of beauty in this right now and there's a lot of opportunity in this right now. And I'm not talking about sort of pragmatic dollars opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity for us as people to your point, change our mindset, understand what's important and what isn't, reflect on who we are and the impact that we're trying to make and the purpose that we're pursuing. There's also a lot of opportunity for organizations to stand by their people and do what they can to, like you're saying, help them out and be there for them, whether that's with, you know, not furloughing people, pushing that to a limit, you know, giving them help, coaches, whatever, those kinds of things. What we've been talking a lot about lately, my brother and I, is that things like this don't build character in the short term. They may over the long term, but in the short term, what it actually does is it reveals character.
Yes.
And you're going to see a lot of organizations, what their true character is and what they truly prioritize. You'll see, you know, are you about dollars or are you about people? Are you about profit or are you about your society or the lives that you're a steward of? And I think there's a lot of opportunity for folks, organizations, frankly, to do some of the things you're talking about. Because this is not going to be like a coma or a coma. I'm sorry. It's not going to be like a coma. You know, if you're in a coma, you know, you can be in it for 9 months and you wake up and it's like, it feels like an instant for you. That's, you know, I've read about that a couple of times. We will have gone through this. And even if we get back to your point, to that normal, whatever normal was, we will be different as a people after having gone through this. And if we think it's, you know, we're just going to forget about it. I think we have a lot of rude awakenings to, that we're going to encounter on the back end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like that movie Jumanji, right? You get stuck in the game and you're like, oh, you're thinking you're going back to your bedroom as an 8-year-old kid and you're 25 and everyone else has grown up. Well, it's going to be that weird feeling, but everyone is going to be in the same boat.
Right.
Right. And it's going to be, listen, it's going to be crazy surreal. Listen, we are living in the craziest movie right now. And here's what I say. Fucking just enjoy it. Just like you get sucked into that movie. Get sucked into this right now, because one of two things. It's going to be really cool and it's going to end in the zombie apocalypse, right? And we all get to be Mad Max. Or, you know, it's going to be something completely different. Or here's reality. It's going to be whatever your reality says it's going to be.
That's right.
And so, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to come out of this all changed. I'm pretty in tune with my emotions. I allow my shadows to rise. Then I put a little light on them. I hug them. I kiss them goodbye. I let them dissolve. And I just learn every day. That's it. I no longer consume a ton of content. I simply just let life be my lesson. And I say, what is the lesson? For example, all this is going on and my wife says to me, Dee, we've got ants in the kitchen. You need to call the pest control guy. And so a couple days go by and for whatever reason, the guy can't call me. He doesn't call me back. And this morning she says to me, she goes, ants are about partnerships and about collaboration, and about teamwork. And it's actually one of my tattoos.
Crazy.
Off the two on my hands. And, you know, here it is on my body, the shamanic symbol for collaboration, dedication, perseverance, teamwork, collaboration. And here they are just showing up when, quote unquote, shit's kind of hit the fan. The new norm is here in our face. And the world is just telling me, keep doing what we're doing and keep having this teamwork, right?
Right.
This is what I need. So if I'm listening and my intuition is dialed in, I'm not hearing pivot and create new courses. I'm not hearing capitalize on the market. I'm not hearing buy stocks. What I'm hearing and seeing and witnessing is collaborate. Make sure that my home is in tune, right? My wife is out seeing clients right now. I'm playing Mr. Mom. We're balancing. We're doing lunch. We're doing laundry. We're doing podcasts. We're doing everything, right? So for me, those are my lessons. And so I think, like you said, if we can slow down, we can start to learn the lessons. And as we come out of this, we come out of this with a new experience. With the new experience, we have a new lens. And with the new lens, we have a new reality.
Yeah. And then you don't waste all this time trying to hold on to something that's fleeting. Exactly. And gone. You can't hold on to a cup of water. Well, you can. You can hold on to the cup. You can't hold on to the water, you know. Why is it so hard for us to let go of that thing? Is it do you think it's a control thing? Do you think it's a security blanket thing? What is it rooted in, you think? Why is it so hard for us to just be in the now?
Fear and anxiety, right? We get so caught up in the story of yesterday, and every time that, you know, every time that someone yelled at us, it validated that thing. And so we either, one of two things, we shy away from getting yelled at, right? Or we get back in your face and don't you dare yell at me, right? And so I think we hold on to those, and we are emotional beings. So it's not about you being in my face. It's about how I feel in that moment. And it's not about you yelling. It's about me remembering how I felt. So we are beings of emotions. And so we get tied to that. And then we have the fear of what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, holy cow, if I have a fear, a deep, deep fear of death and poverty, and I'm uncertain about my job tomorrow, ooh, I can't be right here and right now and recognize that, holy cow, the leaves are starting to come back on the tree, right? A tree out there has got leaves on it, and a couple weeks ago it didn't. And I don't have time to recognize it. Wow, I can feel the sun on my neck right now, right? Just to stop and pause and be in that moment and recognize that the only breath that you need is this one. And the only one you need is the one that's coming next. And pretty soon the one that comes next is going to be this one. So the only breath you need is this one. And when you can find that for a moment, you're not in the fear of tomorrow and the anxiety, and you're not married to the story of yesterday.
Yeah. There's sort of three yous, right? There's like the future you, there's the sort of you in the past, and then there's the now you, and that now you is constantly falling away into the past you. And where that focus point is can lead to either a lot of like regret, I think, or to a lot of anxiety, depending on where that focus point is. And I think what's interesting is the sum of all of those sort of focal points from an organization perspective can also lead to where that organization is living. Is it living in the now, in the present? Is it looking at those collaboration and those opportunities and figuring out, you know, okay, we're going to be okay. We're just going to make this movement. Or is it worried so much about the future that it begins to sort of curtail what it's doing right now and compromise the values that it is supposed to espouse and create sort of a reality in the moment that is not really as conducive to whatever that organization or that team or that individual's purpose is.
I love that. You know, that what I wrote down, what that really triggered me to want to talk about is, I think this is a really good time for companies to redefine their mission statements, right? Because again, we're living in a different world. This digital transformation that we've been through in the last 10 years has changed the way that we consume, has changed the way that we sell, has changed the way that we do business, the way that we live, right? And so this too is going to cause, I think, a lot more digital reformation, if you will. You know, I think there's been some sporting events that have been played in empty arenas. For example, I'm not a big sports guy, but I know like UFC. I think there was a UFC card a weekend or two ago that was actually televised in an arena. I mean, man, think about this in the future. Do that same thing, save money, put that in a warehouse somewhere instead of an arena, televise it, pay-per-view. I have a VR headset on, and now it looks like I'm in there, I'm feeling it, I'm seeing it real time. I can feel the guy sweat on me if I want to, and I'm not paying $8 a beer.
Right.
I'm no futurist, but man, if someone really smart puts their head to that, they can make that a thing. And I'm sure from an ROI perspective for the teams or the organizations, right, it's going to save them a lot of money. Now, lots of different conversations, what the stadium do and blah, blah, blah. But it essentially, there's opportunity for us to literally change the way that we are every single day. And so by reevaluating mission statements, I think we're poised for what tomorrow really brings, a new tomorrow. We talked about a new tomorrow yesterday, but really we have a new tomorrow, right? In this now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a really romantic thing that we always talk about. You know, we're working for a new tomorrow, but it takes sort of something crazy like this to actually make that new tomorrow happen. Because it's just a continuation then of the same past, right? It's the same thing that just keeps repeating over and over again.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you look at, again, 9/11 was probably the last big thing that had an impact on the world. But, you know, when you look at this, this is kind of one of those, I mean, it's not the ice age, right? But it's kind of one of those where there's going to be a lot of tragedy, but there's going to be an opportunity for the phoenix to rise out. Now, do we rise and become narcissistic because we're still holding on to those emotional traumas? Or do we rise out of this and become true love and light? And what a wonderful world that would be.
Yeah, I mean, there is that opportunity. It does feel like that sort of stake in the ground, you know, 100 years from now in textbooks, if they still have books, you know, there'll be a chapter on 9/11 and then there'll be a chapter on this and how it affected everything. And it just feels like one of those sort of seminal pivotal moments in our history, our collective history, you know?
If we were still building pyramids and doing hieroglyphics on cave walls, this would be one of those that would be documented.
Right.
Yeah. There would be pyramids built to recognize this time. There would be, you know, animals and tents and mountains or whatever the hieroglyphics look like on cave walls. That's how impactful and significant today is. So if we're worried about, if we're still holding on to yesterday when things were normal and wishing we can go back to that, or if we're trying to figure out what tomorrow's going to look like, that we cannot like be here. Now we're missing out on so much, regardless of if we choose to label it good or bad, right? Because we look at those cave walls and we go, man, I wonder what it would have been like to do that. We're all trying to figure out how they move tons and tons of, you know, materials to build the pyramids. Well, guess what? We're building the freaking pyramids right now. Right. We don't have to wonder how we're doing it. We just have to be here and we can witness it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about someone who's in an organization now who what you're saying is resonating with them. They are in that corporate thing that you kind of passed through and sort of, you know, ascended out of, so to speak. They see the opportunities of the things that we're talking about. They feel like they're in this pigeonhole or this check the box function. They're working for a board or an executive suite that is so profit-minded, and they want to be able to attribute every dollar spent on ethics and compliance or every dollar spent on HR for, you know, they want to have that clear ROI for everything. What advice would you give them, or what actionable tips would you give them to help break out of that glass box that they may be living in right now?
So it doesn't matter even if you're in a C-suite or you're at the janitor level, right? I think right now, this is the best time to ever ask for a hall pass. So we live in such a socially connected world today that I can get contact information for any CEO that I want. And if I can't do it, I'm pretty certain that within five dials, I can hit the person that can help me to find that, right? And so I say to that person, wherever you are in that organization, this is a time for you to step into leadership. Right now, we all are wearing the title of leader. And whoever is courageous enough to step forward with their crazy ideas and be brash enough to challenge management, because as you know, right now, most leadership is management and most management is in fear, right? So even if that manager shuts you down and says no because they're trying to protect their layer, go above them. Get to the CEO. Get the CEO's ear. Show up at his house. Well, maybe not right now. Show up at his house, right? But no matter what, connect and give that idea, because guess what? CEOs are people too, just like you and I.
Right.
And just like many of us are grasping for straws, they're grasping for straws. And while on the outside, their life may look much grander than ours, as much as we're grasping for a straw, you can imagine what their grasp looks like. So use this time to just connect and go, just do what you have to do, get to the top of the food chain. And if there's ever a chance, wherever a time for you to be bold, it's now. Because here's the reality. No one, we're all in the same, or everyone, we're all in the same boat. You don't have anything to lose, right? So it's really nothing romantic. It's literally pull your britches up and bypass any gatekeeper, go to the top of the food chain and say, listen, this is the state of the world, because we need those conversations right now. Right now, everyone's tiptoeing. We need those brash conversations, and the leaders and the corporations that can have those, that can go to the war room right now, but wrap that war room in grace, are the ones that are going to emerge.
That is such powerful advice, man. That's so, I couldn't agree more, you know, and there's kind of an opportunity, not only in the temporal thing that we're all going through, but also this other thing that you were talking about, where we're all walking through the same grocery stores. We're all buying the same things. We're all watching the same Netflix. We're all consuming the same content. There's a certain, kind of a great leveling that's occurred, where we're all kind of on the same level. And now is an opportunity to take advantage of that great leveling and be bold and be that leader to drive that change in your organization. Because to your point, kind of everything's up for grabs now. We have no idea what this thing looks like on the other side. We have no idea how long it's going to take. We have no idea what the economic implications of it are and so forth. There's a lot of opportunity for growth and for change right now. And it's going to take, I just love what you said. We all are wearing that leader's mantle right now if we want to step up and do it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the reality of it. If I live in a one bedroom apartment and drive a Hyundai, or I live in a mansion and drive a Lambo, guess what? We're both in the same spot in line.
Yep.
Right? Right now is we both stand the chance of getting into VIP. Right. There's the fields are even right now. So it's those of us who are courageous enough. Now, listen, this is me giving some general advice, because I'm not eating that dog food, right? I'm in a different space. I'm choosing to relax. I'm choosing to go internal. That's my path. It's not going external, right? It's going within. I'm going deep within, because I know that the calmer, the more love, the more light that I can put out, the more that's going to feed the collective conscious, the more that I am going to vibrate at that frequency, and the more is going to come to me. That's been my business model. It's worked for me. I'm not changing it, right? But the rest of the world, right? Little different story.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, a good distinction. And it's going to be kind of situational, and it's going to be, you know, someone's going to hear this and they're going to say, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to reach out to this guy. I'm going to go on Zoom Info and I'm going to find the CEO's thing, and I'm going to go over my boss's head or whatever to drive the change that I know needs to be driven, because now is the time for us to step up. And, you know, a lot of what this whole podcast and this conversation and the conversations that I'm having are, like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to help elevate ethics and compliance folks. I'm trying to help elevate HR folks, because they are, you know, treated as a cost center, and all these derogatory terms are thrown around against these people who are trying to make a difference, and they're trying to make an impact on their world, and they're not given the tools, and they end up getting jaded, and they get chewed up and spit out, and they get sort of apathetic at times. Not all, of course, just some that I've seen. And I think it ends up being a tragedy, because they're the ones who are best able to affect the behaviors of the people in the organization. Those are the people who are carrying forward the mission of the company and who are actually the face of the company in the marketplace. They are the brand. The sum total of all those actions and activities build the reputation, and that's the equivalent of the brand. So I know it's a couple steps away from the direct ROI that these profit-minded CEOs are looking for, but it's the root of the tree. I mean, these guys want flowers on the, you know, they want, you know, blossoms on the tree, well, you need to have a strong root system, and that's what these folks can do. And I think what you're talking about is pouring some great nutrients in that soil so they can push those nutrients up and really drive some change in their organization. So this has been a really phenomenal, I don't know, I feel like invigorated. I want to just keep pushing forward, man. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your time coming on here. I've been real excited for this. How can people find you? How can they, you know, hear more of your content and your ideas and your thoughts and things like that?
Absolutely. So LinkedIn, Dylan Ali. IG, I'm pretty active on there. Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N-D-A-L-E. D-Y-L-A-N-D-A-A-L-I. You can find me under my name at Facebook as well. And so I'm actually working on putting all of those content pieces together in a one centralized format. Cool. What's really great is LinkedIn is such a phenomenal platform for me, right? It's where you and I met, and it continues to just grow at this tremendous pace. And I actually just got kind of lucky. I think I caught LinkedIn on a trajectory upwards, right?
Yeah.
But just so many new contacts every day and so many new dialogues every day. In the next probably week or two, I'll have that central depository or compository of all those pieces. So, you know, you can just go on and binge watch and binge consume, right? Cool. And it'll all be out there and all free. And my contact information is out there. So if you want to reach out to me and have a dialogue or, you know, talk about coaching or talk about speaking, you know, that stuff is out there too. DylanAli.net is the website. But enough of that stuff, man. Just literally hit me up on Messenger on any one of those platforms and we'll have a dialogue.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. I'm blessed to know you. I'm blessed to have you on the show. I feel like I learned a lot, and I don't know. This is our time to, you know, reinvent ourselves, both individually, corporately, and maybe even as a country. So I appreciate the role you're playing in it. I appreciate the positive force that you've been in that community and on this podcast today, brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. Have a great day.